Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This week in the news, I just wanted to recap and remind everybody that if you're a grandmaster of a state or an assistant area deputy or a district deputy or whatever your title is, and you've got a program to promote or an idea that your state is really trying to push for the fraternity, let me know if you want to come on and talk about it. Maybe you can grab some additional PR that way. I'd love to have you on and we can chit chat about whatever you'd like. Also, I need to mention that Achilles Sitigos's book that was supposed to be out at the end of September has been pushed back just a couple weeks. We're looking at the beginning of October now, but they are finalizing the details, and as soon as it's ready, we'll have it up on the Facebook page, on the blog, on the website, wcypodcast.com, for you all to click through and grab your copies of those. I do need to mention that Grand Lodge sessions are right around the corner for us here in Illinois, the second weekend in October, and so that weekend there might not be a show. So look for details concerning that in the future. And as far as it is concerned with show not being available or new episodes not coming out, I do have a baby on the way, and probably it will be here by the time you are listening to this. So this will be baby number 4 for my wife and I. We're really excited about it. But with that excitement and chaos comes a little bit of a lull, the lag in the show. So what does that mean for the listeners? It means that we will still have a show next week, but we might not have a show the week after that. So it'll be a short show, then a no show, then a show, and then no show. And then the show will resume until the winter break. And I just wanted to give you guys all a heads up on that. So there's nothing wrong with the show, nothing like that. So keep that in mind. And speaking of things wrong with the show, it was just brought to my attention that our descriptions never show up in iTunes. It's always just the same description, which is the show description, which is chock full of tags, basically. And we're trying to fix that. I was told that there was an issue with one of the settings that we had checked, so we unchecked the setting, and hopefully it pings iTunes and everything updates. So we'll be looking for that in the future. That way you'll be able to go through and read some of the show notes as you decide which one you want to listen to. And I am still updating the past episode titles, so that is an ongoing project until I get all caught up. So I hope you guys understand the little bit of a lag that we may have. I also wanted to say that if I get the chance to do any interviews down at the Grand Lodge of Illinois during the sessions, I will most certainly try to get some of those, and we can put them into the show. I think we'll have a lot of fun with it. We've got two pieces for you this week. One is called The Baal's Bridge Square, which is Baal as in the ancient god. So we'll go into that, and then right after that, stay tuned for Brother Stephen L. Harrison's Masonic Minute. And then we've got another piece coming up after that, and a famous Freemason. Got a good show lined up for you. Enjoy. Baal's Bridge Square. Everything points to the fact that the craft was flourishing in Ireland in the 16th century. It is impossible, however, to be dogmatic about the point, whether or not it possessed any esoteric ceremonies. With most of us, that will be a matter of faith rather than evidence. Yet, if we may trust the testimony of a certain old relic of antiquity, some measure of ethical symbolism was associated on occasion with the implements of masonry, as it is shown by what is usually known as the Baal's Bridge Square, carefully preserved by Union Lodge No. 13, Limerick, warranted November of 1732, and probably, quote-unquote, time immemorial, like others of our ancient lodges. This ancient brass square was discovered in excavating the foundation of Baal's Bridge in the city of Limerick in November of 1830. It was dug out of the eastern corner of the foundation of the Northern Land Pier on the King's Island or English town side of the River Shannon, where the abatement of the new bridge now, 1850, stands. The position in which the square was found indicates that one of our Masonic customs still in vogue was practiced in Ireland over 400 years ago. The annexed sketch of the square is an exact facsimile, full size, reproduced from a rubbing, a matter of some difficulty owing to the metal being much corroded, made for us by Brother James Laguerre, the courteous secretary of Triune Masonic Lodge, number 333 in Limerick. It would be easy to give earlier instances of this implement being invested with the moral meaning but this is the first definite Irish example. It is suggestive of much. So that's the end of that piece, and it's just really kind of a testament of how old many of our working tools are. So this is a 400-year-old bronze square that was found, and we'll have a picture of that in the show notes. And again, it was reproduced, but just amazing when these kind of things turn up in history. Again, this turned up in history back in 1830 when it was being dug out of the ground. Pretty cool stuff, though. Next up, we're going to go into illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison's Masonic Minute.
Most people, even non-basketball fans, remember NBA standout Scottie Pippen and his instrumental role, along with Michael Jordan, in leading the Chicago Bulls to 6 National Basketball Association titles. In addition to the 6 titles between 1991 and 1998, Pippen was a 7-time NBA All-Star and in 1994 won the All-Star Game's Most Valuable Player Award. In 1995, he led the NBA in steals and was named to the NBA 50th Anniversary All-Star Team. After a stellar career, he is one of only 4 Chicago Bulls players who has had his number retired. And it is that number that has led to a bit of controversy. Scottie Pippen is one of the country's highest profile Prince Hall Masons, and his number as a player was 33. This fact has drawn the attention of conspiracy theorists who claim he insisted on that number because of his membership. 33, after all, is the Illuminati's favorite number. Over the years, conspiracy groups have speculated Brother Pippen's membership has been behind some of the things he has done. Most recently, Pippen suggested LeBron James, who is not a Freemason, might be the greatest NBA player ever. Accusations claimed he did this because James had flashed Masonic signs prior to one of the playoff games when he made hand gestures not resembling anything Masonic after the playing of the national anthem. The simple fact is, Brother Pippen's number has nothing to do with the fact he is a Freemason. The University of Central Arkansas has also retired Pippen's number 33, where he wore it during his college career, before he ever joined the fraternity. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right. As always, Brother Stephen L. Harrison really brings the good stuff to the show. I always thoroughly enjoy his segments. And if you like those, just imagine having a book full of them. So head on over to Amazon.com and pick up a copy of Freemasons, Tales from the Craft by Stephen L. Harrison. It's a fantastic book, and if you want it on an ebook, you can get that too. So that you have it in the e-format, or you can get a paperback. I read mine on the ebook, but I have the paperback that I keep inside my Masonic briefcase at all times, because you find neat tidbits in there that you can just share and talk about around the table, and just incredible odd things that have happened within the history of the world relating to Freemasons. Again, check those out. Links will be in the show notes, as always. Next is another paper, and it's entitled The Transition Theory Refuted. The transition theory of Masonic history holds that men not actively involved in the operative Masons trade were admitted to operative Masons lodges, and as the Masons trade declined, these outsiders took control of lodges. Little proof exists in support of this theory, although it was held in high regard during the 19th century and through much of the 20th. With one exception, there is no evidence that any non-operative was ever admitted to an operative lodge in England. Although some Scottish lodges changed from an operative to non-operative basis, none are evident in England. The following compromised practically all Masonic references prior to 1717. Although not a Masonic reference, the earliest reference to a secret society was the Decree number 37, columns 763 and 764, volume 25 of the Concilium Venienese of 1326, in which the Church attacks secret societies, describing them with such words as fraternal assistance, signs, tokens, obligations, and elections of masters. The first record of an initiation in an English lodge is October 16, 1646, when Elias Ashmole noted in his diary that he and Colonel Henry Mainwaring had been initiated into a non-operative lodge. He doesn't mention the lodge again until 11th of March, 1682. The Old Charges. The Old Charges are manuscripts setting out regulations for the operative Mason's trade and read at meetings. The oldest and most often referred to in non-operative lodge lectures are the Regis Poem, 1390, Cook Manuscript, 1410 to 1425, the Grand Lodge, Minnesota, number 11583, and Melrose, number 1MS 1581. There is no extant ritual minutes or descriptions, and no primary evidence of Masonic activity in the 17th century. There is still a list of 27 members of a lodge in Chester dated 1673, and one in Edward Hall claimed initiation into Chichester Lodge in 1695, but there are no other records of either lodge. The York No. 4 MS of 1693 named six members of a lodge of which nothing else is known. William Hutchison, in his The Spirit of Masonry, 1775, with Grand Lodge official sanction, rejected any direct lineage to operative Masons, but many Masons continue to accept that lineage. There is a possibility of simultaneous operative guild Masonry and the speculative craft in the 17th century. It is possible that associations became non-operative after the secession of church building around 1540. It should be noted that nine lodges founded in the 18th century bear the word operative in their name to this day. It is possible that the dissolution of the monasteries played a role. It is also possible that there are multiple sources. The documented history of craft Freemasonry starts in 1717. The Grand Lodge of England, nicknamed the Grand Lodge of the Moderns, was founded on the 24th of June, 1717, while the Grand Lodge of England, nicknamed the Grand Lodge of the Ancients, was founded on the 17th of July, 1751. Their union on the 25th of November, 1813, laid to rest the claim that the Ancients were schismatic, when in fact there was demonstrated lineage to the Grand Lodge of Ireland. The Union of 1813 also marked the close of craft Masonry in England as a Christian association. The Duke of Sussex, elected Grand Master annually until his death in 1843, proclaimed Freemasonry to be universal and removed all Christian references from the lectures and ritual. He encouraged dependent bodies and the Royal Arch to pursue a Christian course, but maintained the universality of the three craft degrees. Well, quite interesting. You know, the beginning of that paper really sets a high standard for what they want to accomplish, and that is to say that there is nothing that suggests that there was ever a transition from operative to speculative, and that they possibly existed one and the same at the same time. I don't have an answer for that. I found the paper interesting, to say the least, but my favorite part about it was the bit at the end about the documented history of craft Freemasonry starting in 1717, and of course, the Duke of Sussex, when he actually proclaimed Masonry to be universal, and he made them remove all the Christian references from lectures and ritual. Very interesting stuff indeed. So again, that is an excerpt from The Origin of Freemasonry, A New Theory by C.N. Batham. I think you guys can all probably just find that on the internet. I will have both of these papers in a PDF document for your download. If you have the application, just click on the old bonus features, download the app. It's a little E for extras. And if you're on an Android, use the soft key with three lines. Sometimes I get questions. People ask me, I don't know how to access the extras. And that's kind of how you do it. So with that, we're going to go right into how to support the show. We've talked about it in almost every episode. You all know how to support this show. Head on over to wcypodcast.com and click on the support the show links, or you can click on the limited edition store and pick up a pin, or you can do a direct donation via PayPal. And if you do decide to go to the support the show page, where there are many links to different places like freemasonryart.com, freemasontees.com, onnit.com. Anytime you do some shopping at any one of those places and you've clicked through those links that we have there and you use the promo code WCY at your checkout, they take a portion of your purchase and send it back to the show to help keep the lights on, okay? And then you're also getting a 10% discount on whatever you're ordering. People always ask me, do I use any of that stuff? Do I use anything from onnit.com? I sure do. I use the Alpha brand. I love it. Do I order anything from freemasonryart.com? Yes, I sure do. In fact, my gift to Brother Rob Lewis, if you guys know him, I'm sure you do. He was on an episode of our show a while back, and of course, he had his own podcast for a while. Brother Rob Lewis, I bought his apron that I gave to him on his third degree raising, and I gave that to him then. And also, freemasonryart.com, if you don't know, is run by Brother Juan Sepulveda of the Winding Stairs. What's fantastic is I get to talk to Juan all the time, and my year as master is almost up, so I have to get a past master's apron. Who do you think is gonna make it? Well, of course, Brother Juan Sepulveda, I have commissioned and retained him to create my past master's apron. I'm really excited about it, and I will keep everybody posted with some pictures and stuff when he shares with me. I'm really excited about it. So, Brother Juan, if you're listening, thank you so much for doing that for me. And again, if you guys want to check out some great stuff, please do check out freemasonryart.com. Now, not a part of supporting the show, but there is another company out there that I recently did some business with, and it's just fantastic. I am talking about MasonicRevival.com. I first heard about them through Brother Jason Richards of the Masonic Roundtable, who bought a few ties, and he said they were fantastic. And I said, okay. And so I decided that maybe this would be a good opportunity for me to see what Masonic Revival had in the way of things that I could offer my officers as my gifts at the end of the year. And sure enough, I found some great stuff. I ordered it. I got it 3 days later. The brother was exceptional on shipping. Packaging was phenomenal. Just a great all-around experience. So if you have some time, please do check out MasonicRevival.com, MasonicRevival.com. Here's what's great. The prices are right. You're getting really, really, really great stuff, and Brother Edgar is not killing your wallet. It's awesome. So please do check that out. He's got some great stuff. He does have neckties. He has some keychains. He has some unique items. He's got t-shirts. He has a few aprons. He's got some pins. Overall, I think you guys will definitely enjoy the experience of checking that out. So hopefully by the time I'm done talking about this, you're already on the website ordering. He's got some great stuff. So again, please check it out, MasonicRevival.com. Now, we talked about neckties there, and we wouldn't be talking about neckties unless we also mentioned Brother John Paul Gomez's amazing neckties as well. If you're on his newsletter, you got an email just recently and he announced 3 new ties. And these ties are, as always, amazing. Some great artwork went into them. He's got a York Rite tie, a really nice looking Scottish Rite tie, and it looks like one called the Corinthian number 2. Fantastic looks, and as usual, high quality stuff. So please do, if you haven't already, head on over to fraternalties.com and sign up for the email newsletter so that you don't miss out on the purchase, because he takes his orders, you pay him up front, and in a few weeks, you'll get your finished product. He has to pay for them in advance, so good things are worth the wait. So go on over to fraternalties.com and sign up for that email newsletter. He's also got a ton of other projects in the works, like there's a wooden bow tie, there's a Mason's Lady shirt that's really cool. So please do head on over there and show some love. Next up is the famous Freemason of the Week. This week is Richard Eve, and he was born on December 6th, 1831, and he passed away on the 7th of July, 1900. He was a solicitor and notary in Aldershot in Hampshire in the 19th century, and a prominent Freemason who was the Grand Treasurer of the United Grand Lodge of England in 1889, and the chairman of the Royal Masonic School for Boys. He defended Ahmed Urabi in Cairo when he was tried by the restored Khedivate on the 3rd of December, 1882, following the Urabi Revolt, which had led the Anglo-Egyptian War. Eve was born in Bromsgrove Street in Kidderminster, the youngest son of Anne and John Eve, the foreman in a local carpet factory. After leaving school, Eve was articled to a solicitor's office in Leamington Spa. In 1846, He was initiated into Guy's Lodge number 556, now 395, in 1854, becoming master of the lodge in 1861. He joined Brecknock Lodge number 936, now 651, in Brecon in Wales in 1861 during a short period there. He set up his own small solicitor's office in Aldershot at the time the British Army was rapidly expanding its presence in the area. Here he joined Panmure Lodge number 723. Over the next 15 years, his Aldershot legal practice expanded greatly, and he became a prominent local citizen, entering politics and serving on various local authorities and becoming Lord of the Manor of Farnborough in Hampshire, and a country councillor for Hampshire. Eve stood unsuccessfully as a Liberal candidate for Parliament 5 times, once in Freemasonry, joining the Grand Master's Lodge No. 1 in London in 1884. Eve was appointed as Treasurer of the Supreme Grand Chapter in 1887 and Grand Treasurer of the United Grand Lodge of England in 1889. The year in which he was linked to the boys' school was in 1891, and he served there until his death in 1900. In 1899, a lodge was formed which was linked to the boys' school, and it was named Richard Eve Lodge number 2772 in his honor. A history of the lodge states that it, quote-unquote, had its origin in the wish of many admirers of Richard Eve to perpetuate his name as a worthy citizen of London and as a sterling worker in the Masonic cause. Richard Eve was taken ill in London when he had gone for the laying of a foundation stone for the boys' school, and he died at 11 Nottingham Place in Marylebone of a seizure a few days later on the 7th of July, 1900. He was buried in Aldershot Cemetery, where a large granite memorial of the figure of Charity and a child adorns his grave. He never married, and his estate was left to fellow solicitors. The Masonic funeral was reported in the Freemason on July 21st, 1900. Quote, Brother Eve had found in life manifold points of sympathetic contact with his fellows, and on the day his friends rose up from all parts of England to pay a last tribute of respect to his memory, it was a solemn and inspiring sight. The long procession of black-coated men, the great body of Masons marched in twos in front of the carriage. There were about 100 of them, all wearing the customary white gloves and carrying their sprigs of acacia. A 29-foot-tall monumental drinking fountain to Eve's memory was unveiled in Brighton Park in Kidminster in 1902. This was raised by, quote-unquote, admiring friends to keep his memory green in his native town, which he had ardently loved. The monument is faced with glazed Doulton tiles in green terracotta and bronze, and a portrait of Eve in the profile. That's it for this week. I know it was a little bit shorter of an episode, but that is because I've got so much stuff going on right now, getting ready for this baby and everything else that's going on. The year is winding down for me Masonically. Next year, it will be back in full swing as I take on the role of Lodge Secretary. I will keep that position for 5 years. That is my promise to myself, and hopefully I will start grooming somebody to replace me in just 2 years, so they'll be totally ready to go, and hopefully we can keep that tradition moving along. Now, again, thank you so much for listening this week. I hope you enjoyed the program. I hope it wasn't too short for you. And as always, please check out the Midnight Freemasons 3 times a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, for amazing articles and great content. Please do not forget about the Masonic Roundtable, going live every Tuesday night, 10, 9 Central. Interact with us on social media via Facebook or Twitter. And thanks in advance for all your support of the program. We'll talk to you all next week. Stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.